te Vasudevaya. We're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 1st chapter, the advent of Lord Krishna, introduction. This morning, we're reading text 38. This is the beginning of Vasudeva's attempts to dissuade Kamsa from murdering his sister on the ride back from her wedding. Translation. O great hero, one who takes birth is sure to die, for death is born with the body. One may die today, or after hundreds of years, but death is sure for every living entity. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vasudeva wanted to impress upon Kamsa that although Kamsa feared dying and therefore wanted to kill even a woman, he could not avoid death. Death is sure. Why then should Kamsa do something that would be detrimental to his reputation and that of his family? As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2.27, jatasya hi dhruvo mrityur dhruvam janma mritasya cha tasmad apari harye arte natvam sochitum arasi. For one who has taken his birth, death is certain, and for one who is dead, birth is certain. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. One should not fear death. Rather, one should prepare oneself for the next birth. One should utilize one's time in this human form to end the process of birth and death. It is not that to save oneself from death, one should entangle oneself in sinful activities. This is not good. Mrityur janmavatam vira dehena sahajayate adya vabda shatante va mrityur vai praninam yuvaha. O great hero, one who takes birth is sure to die, for death is born with the body. One may die today or after hundreds of years, but death is sure for every living entity. So the death problem is there. Actually, the business of Krishna consciousness is to solve the death problem. And which means for us, what we do when we become devotees of Krishna is we get the dying business over with nicely and enter into our eternal life. Because it says here, one should not fear death, but of course the whole world is moving under the fear of death. And that is because of their material attachments and their false ego. The conception of I and mine. I meaning I am this body, and mine means those things that are in relationship to the body belong to me. So the living entity is a spirit soul, and his actual intrinsic nature is eternal. But when the living entity turns away from Krishna and wishes to embark on an independent enterprise, he's given a false consciousness, ahankara, ahankara vimudatma. He becomes bewildered by his false consciousness. He's given a material body, and he's given the facility to identify himself with the material body. So the eternal living entity now identifies himself for the purposes of sense gratification with something that's temporary. So Prabhupada describes the situation of the eternal living entity in the material world as an incompatible situation. We have our desire to live forever. And we try to impose that desire or realize that desire in a situation where everything is temporary. That's the incompatible situation. Every living entity wants to go on living. As soon as there's some threat to its existence, it tries to preserve itself and protect itself and maintain itself. And you get the tiniest little microorganism down to the greatest beings, they all want to keep on going. And they want to keep on going as long as they possibly can, if possible, forever. So we say that, we call it the instinct of self-preservation. Instinct means you don't have to think about it, you don't have to make any calculations, you just do it. In any situation, you keep on going. Here Kamsa has this instinct of self-preservation. You've got some threat coming down. That's the eighth offspring of my sister. This disembodied voice from the sky said it's going to kill me. Bang, let me offer right now and get the problem over with in the early stages. So because of his instinct of self-preservation, he's going to commit an abominable act. He doesn't even have to think. So this is how everyone acts, instinct of self-preservation. Everybody wants to go on forever. That's like the fundamental desire of the living entities. So then if you look back upon the history of life on this planet, where every living being is born with this incredibly tenacious drive for self-preservation, and let us see who has succeeded. No one. The failure rate is 100%. What happens in order to stay alive, in order to preserve yourself, is one has to embark in a war against material nature. You come to the human platform and you realize, oh, it's material nature that's going to... You see, this body is an assembly of material nature. And it's part of a whole system of material nature, and this material nature is a conspiracy to disassemble me. And I can be disassembled in all kinds of different ways. So I now have to defend myself against the onslaught of material nature. And so first thing I have to do is, if it gets too cold, I have to keep warm. That's the threat of material nature. If it gets too warm, I have to find a way to be cool. I have to keep the sun off my head. I have to keep the freezing rains out of my house. I start to protect myself against material nature. Still, there's problems. So I work harder and harder. And I keep thinking, I can protect myself a little bit, but there's still more. So I try to control material nature as much as I possibly can. And the recent morning, we've got a big system of attempting science, material science, systematic attempt to control nature. That's his business, to control material nature. We can just figure it out, we can take material nature, we can reduce it so it's completely expressible in terms of numbers, we can manipulate those numbers and therefore predict events and then get in there. We can find out what's making material nature work, we can get down in the mechanisms of things, and we can just, you know, flick a few switches, bang, 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 and fine. I've heard it described that certain people who are working on to solve the aging problem, they think that in the cells there's a certain process that takes place that causes age, and that there's a biological switch that gets thrown and aging begins. And they describe it like that, we're going to, you know, get to the point where we can go in there and flick the switch back up. And if some unseen hand comes from somewhere and flicks it off again, we'll just reach back in there and flick it up and then tape it up there, you know. Whatever. Just keep working at it. So you won't, you know. So, you know, when you assert you get to the age you want to be, you just start taking shots and you don't grow old, right? Well, I've conquered that problem. This is what they think, like that. Control material nature. And then do the same thing with death. So, you know, you read that and you think, yeah, great, that's what we'll do. Anyway, aside from these sorts of fantasies, you'll notice that that people are, while they're trying to control material nature, as Prabhupada says, the more you try to control material nature, the more you become entangled in her complexities. This idea that you're going to go in and flick some switch and then everything's going to go on. You don't know what's on the other side of that switch, what are the mechanisms it's attached to, and what the consequences of flicking that switch is going to be. You know, all these simple problems. But because people are dealing with material nature, it's so much bigger and stronger and complicated. And it's got brains behind it too. You know, all those people don't recognize, reckon with. Bigger brains than we are. Anyway, one has declared war on material nature in order to preserve and protect yourself, and it's a war 100% certain, as he says here, you're going to lose. That means it's not possible to become happy. Of course, what people like to do is not recognize what the facts of material life or the fact of death. They think that death is something that happens to other people. People that are maybe different from me, like old or poor or something, happens in foreign countries. And when the death approaches a little bit close and takes off some relative or something, people can't believe it. Or they find they've got a fatal disease, their first reaction is, why me? As if somehow or other they've been unfairly singled out from the rest of the human race. Because I thought I was so special, somehow or other. Or that it will happen when I'm old, somewhere past the age of 70. Somewhere down in the remote end of time, then I'll have a problem. So this way people don't deal with the problem of death. They suppress it, they become unconscious. And as a result of becoming unconscious about death, you actually become unconscious about a lot of things. Very hard to become selectively unconscious. That's why most people in the material world are sleepwalkers. They're sleepwalking through their lives, keeping the television going, the radio going, some buzz going, so they don't have to think too much. And what they're busy not thinking about Just like sometimes people think very hard, most people are not thinking very hard. What they're not thinking about is the real problems. And the real problem is the death problem. So to become a devotee, we have to look at things as they are. That this material world is a slaughterhouse. The death mortality rate is 100%. That these scenes of horror, like warfare, or concentration camps, or holocausts of various things, huge natural disasters, it's just the normal process of things, slightly speeded up. That's all. When you see, I once knew some devotees who happened to be in the airport in Rome, about to avoid get on a jet for Israel, when there was an attack by Palestinian terrorists. And one instant it's calm and peaceful and, you know, the normal everyday sleepwalking scene with the music playing and everything, and people are queued up to get on the airplane. Some people are buying their tickets. And in the next minute, there are body parts everywhere. Inconceivable amounts of blood. People screaming, crying, going nuts. Just like that. They started their attack by taking a hand grenade and rolling it down the floor through a pile of crowd of people. And it blew up, and then one thing after another. And the security guards just started shooting every which way. And Palestinian terrorists were shooting, and the security guards were shooting. And it was a mess. I mean, as I said, you know, heads, legs, you know, people's intestines strewn across the concourse and so on. Instantly, just like that. And that's what material nature is like. At any minute, there's the author Ian Fleming, who used a lot to like fly in airplanes, because he said an airplane is a comfortable living room that at any second can turn into a blazing inferno. But any comfortable living room can at any second turn into a blazing inferno. You don't have to be at 30,000 feet. We're at 30,000 feet right now. We have no visible means of support. So this is, people are not looking at this thing. The death is coming. And you could say 100 years, you could say in the next minute, it doesn't make any difference. We should assume it's coming in the next minute. And Prabhupada said, you think, well, I'll worry about death when I become old. And he said, old age means just before you die. So who can say he's not old? So we should assume, as a matter of course, that I have a few minutes to live. I've got a very short time to live. What shall I do with my remaining minutes or hours? Devotees should always be living, be conscious that we are on the brink of death at every second, but that we are on the brink of death. Because we are, as a matter of fact. And our business, actually, if we're devotees, is we get the whole dying business over with. Nicely, in a pleasant way. Because what is the dying business? Prabhupada says that death is an illusion we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. It's the I and mine. I've identified with my body, and I take everything around me as objects for sense gratification. Therefore, the time comes when the soul is separated from the body. I've been fighting my war on material nature to prevent this from happening, but somehow or other, death comes in with his little pin bores through my castle walls and, you know, past all the guards, past all the security measures, past all my defenses, and gets in there somehow or other. We couldn't keep him out no matter what. So I lose my war on material nature, and I give up all my attachments. I'm so attached to this that I've formed various relationships for my happiness, which I'm going to perpetuate in the teeth of everything. And now the moment of truth has arrived, and farewell, wife. Farewell, mistresses. Farewell, children. Farewell, money. Farewell, friends. Farewell, beautiful view out my window. Farewell, all the nice things I was attached to. It's all being ripped away. And then my very body, so much pleasure, turns into a hell in itself, and I can't wait to get out of the thing. This is what happens. It's called renunciation by force. Because I've got all my hooks in this body and in the material world, I'm hanging on and something's pulling me out. And therefore it's the worst possible experience. And everything, everything I built my life on, I now see it's stupid. It was ruined. It's been taken away. I was such a big deal, and now you realize what humiliation it is to die. I was such a big deal. I was so proud. I looked good in suits. People thought I was a great guy. They sang my praises. What a wonderful person. And now I know the truth. My body is this putrid mass of unbearable things. People can't even stand to come near it. Fluid is running out of every single hole, foul-smelling fluid. And this is what I am. My God, what a... This is what happens to people. We should avoid all this. So the practice of devotional service, when we become a devotee. So death means is this ultimate failure to perpetuate our relationships. So in Krishna consciousness, we form relationships that are not on the bodily platform. First of all, the relationship is there with Krishna. There's a relationship that at the time of death, it continues. The soul and the super soul remain. It's the super soul that takes the soul into a new body. The poor guy doesn't know. He has a false identity. He doesn't know his real self. He doesn't know the super self. He's unknown to himself. And he thinks that putrid body is himself that he's leaving behind. That's the source of his trouble. He doesn't have the real relationship, but we have the relationship with Krishna. So, and we have relationships with other living entities on the basis of devotional service, not on the basis of the material body. So we form those relationships on the positive side, and we give up false relationships. We give up the notion, I am this body. We give up the notion of sense gratification in the material world. We give up our attachments to things. People think, oh, you become a devotee, it's so hard. You have to give up all this. What do we say? Oh, yes, you don't have to be a devotee and you don't have to give it up. You have to give it up. That time of death is the time that you give it all up. So our Krishna conscious process and their process is the same process. You give up everything and you bow down before Krishna. That's what we're doing when we become devotees of Krishna. We give up everything. This is my wife, these are my children, this is my girlfriend, this is my happy little home, this is all these false conceptions. This is mine. We say to Krishna, you know, that song by Thakur Bhakti Vinod, everything that I say is mine, I'm now giving it to you. It's yours. I have no property. I have no property. I have no wealth. I have no position whatsoever in this world. I'm simply your servant, and everything around me belongs to you. I am no longer the enjoyer. For that person, the time of death holds no longer any threat whatsoever. What have you got to lose? Nothing. Of course, the materialist who's going through the horrible process of death, he doesn't have anything to lose either, but he doesn't know it. He's taken possession of things that don't belong to him. But that possession is only mental. But the devotee has nothing to lose. We've already done it. Of course, our mind is so treacherous that even though we give everything up, still it keeps wanting to grab and say, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. That's why it's good to remember. I could exit this scene at any second. Why should I have a claim on anything? We should stop this tendency of the mind to still think, oh, I'm secure now. I've got a position in this material world. I've got a future that's bright. Let me develop that future that's bright. No, we should not have that. Naturally, we should make plans to serve Krishna. But our plans to serve Krishna are plans that will not be interrupted at the time of death. Service to Krishna goes on. So that's what we say to people. You give up everything and bow down before Krishna. Recognize his supremacy. If you don't, you have to die. You will be killed. You don't have the choice not to surrender to Krishna. But your surrender is this ghastly business of death. Your surrender is you renounce everything and you bow down before Krishna. You fall down flat. Because when you get crushed like that by material nature, that's when you have to acknowledge a higher power. You thought you were the big doer, you were the controller, there was no God, you could handle everything, you got it under control. Now you learn your lesson. You bow down before Krishna. Some living entities are so stubborn they have to do this birth after birth after birth after birth before they finally get the idea that they're not the supreme. We should have that idea now. We've been through this process enough times. We should understand that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So by surrendering to Krishna and engaging in devotional service, we've already entered into our eternal life. One who's actually renounced every the false enjoyment of this material world. We're here, we're dead, and we're survived. Now nothing bad can happen to us. This is already our eternal life. It has begun right here. To a materialist, this looks like a place in the material world. To those of us who can see what's going on, I'm here, Prabhupada is here, Radha Krishna are here, glorification of Radha Krishna is here. This is my eternal life. It's going on here. It's going on in Goloka Vrindavan. What will be the big change? No big change. We'll cook for Radha and Krishna. We'll make garlands for Radha and Krishna. We'll sing songs for Radha. We'll do the same thing. This is it. The worst is over. That's how we should live. We should look, and so every day we should say, I'm a dead man. It's finished. It's over. When I see material objects in this world, I should say, hey, it's not for me. I'm dead already. I've given up on this stuff. I know better. And we can do that because we have another life. Of course, if we're not absorbed in that other life, we're living in the temple but we're not engaging our senses in devotional service, then we'll still be hankering to re-enter the material world and again get caught up in birth and death and have to keep learning that lesson in that horrible way. But if we maintain our activities of Krishna consciousness, which are the perpetual, the eternal activities of the soul, then we will not, we'll be in this material world, but it'll be like the lotus leaf on water. It never gets wet, even though it's sitting on the water. One can be in this material world, and it's just as good as Vaikuntha. So even though the processes of material nature are going on around us, we are not caught in them. And because we don't have to worry about ourselves, now we have time to worry about other people. And to not only to get our we out, but bring some other people out of the disaster of history and time. That should be our a mission in Krishna consciousness. So it's not to be forgotten. As soon as we engage in trying to enjoy in this world, then we are covered by this death. Prabhupada says this, that death is an illusion we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. So every sense object is bait in the trap. And any sense becomes fixated on an object, it lures us to our death. And animals are, you know, they're caught that way. There's a fish. Well, fish life is all tongue. It lives in the water, and water is the medium for the sense of taste. And actually that little stripe along the sides of fish is nothing but taste buds. So the flavors dissolve in the water and they taste with their whole body. They look like big tongues, actually, living tongues. And fish life is all tongue, Prabhupada says. That's their big sense. You know? So you want to catch a fish, what do? You take some flavorful thing, an earthworm or something, and you thread it on a hook with a sharp point and a barb. Put it in there and the fish gets all excited and then death, right? It tastes so good and there's death. And that's the way it is in the material world. It's these nice sense objects. Or the moths are attracted to light, insects that are attracted to light. As they're visual sense is their biggest thing. And so when there's a candle at night, they come in, they love it, they spiral in around it and fried. Another sense leads them down. In India, hunters know how to hunt deer by playing sweet sounds on flutes. They know how to play the flute. And the deer gets enchanted by this sound. And he follows it and follows it and follows it and follows it until he comes within bow range and then bonk, he's got them. So anything, any sense can drag you in there like that. And of course, how to catch an elephant. You want to catch a bull elephant, you take a female elephant who's in heat and tie her down somewhere. And then in front of her you dig a big deep pit. You cover the pit over with bamboo and leaves. And then the female elephant is there making calls of love. And the male elephant, finally understands she's there and he comes charging in full of enthusiasm. He's caught. So every sense object is we should see this is a baited trap. As soon as I go for it, wrap my senses around it, and let my consciousness flow and say, good, I'm dead. I've just taken the trap, and the price I pay is that I have to die. I identify, as soon as I try to enjoy, I acquire the false ego. It is not a fact that one can enjoy sense pleasure and not acquire a false ego. If you already have some Krishna consciousness and we do that, we call it a fall down, and we do that, you lose your Krishna consciousness. You forget Krishna. One day you're thinking there, you're thinking I'm not my body, and you have a lot of what we call realization. And then something or other, you get attracted to a sense object, and you engage in that little act of acquisition and enjoyment, digestion, and so on, satisfaction. And then you think, I'm not my body, and it sounds weird. It sounds curiously abstract, doesn't strike a chord anymore. What happened to it? This is what happens. Their false ego has developed around this act of enjoying. And it's not until we recover from that, give it up again, then again the Krishna consciousness light comes back on again. And of course we can go through this, you know, on, off, on, off, on, off. But the idea is to understand things philosophically, see things in the right way. And that these objects are not, they're death for me. Don't think I'm going to be like the mouse that's going to go into the trap, get the cheese, and pull out before it goes down. You can't do it. This trap is fast and instantaneous. There are no mechanical failures. As soon as that's there, that's how we acquire the false ego. So we just have to be wise. We have to be wise. We have to see things for what they are. And the more attractive something appeals to us as enjoyment, the more we have to think, this is not for me to enjoy. It is Krishna's. I don't touch Krishna's property. I engage Krishna's things and Krishna's service. That should be a way of looking at things in this world. Didn't we live very happily in this material world? And that it's not that we're going around unsatisfied. Because then we have the relationship with Krishna, the relationship with Krishna's devotees, and full satisfaction is there. And in fact, once we begin to taste that satisfaction in Krishna consciousness, we can't imagine what it was in the material world that kept us there for so long. Why we have been betrayed into this false consciousness of material existence. So we have to discriminate. We have to be able to know what is matter and what is spirit. How to see things. How to see myself. Then we can live deathlessly in the deadly world. And we don't have to be afraid of it. Well, one of the consequences of one is surrendered to Krishna is abhaya. It becomes fearless. The whole undercurrent of terror that's in the material world, the terror of death, it goes away for a devotee. And live with complete happiness and complete security, because we do not depend upon any arrangement in this material world for our happiness. These are the actual conditions of freedom, not anything else. So this is how Prabhupada says, one should not fear death. One should utilize one's time in this human form to end the process of birth and death. That's our real business. Then we will have made some good use of our time. Otherwise, if we try to be enjoyers in this world and sense gratifiers, we're just killing ourselves. You know, right now there's a big debate going on in Congress over cigarettes, those little sense objects that cause death. And what they don't, any sense gratification is a cigarette. They're all, every one of them, any sense object, it causes death. Some are just more obvious than others. There's some cause it quicker, maybe some cause it a little later, but they all do. Because it's the illusion we impose upon ourselves when we want to enjoy in this world. So we should not be stupid. We should not take what is bad and call it good, and not take what is good and call it bad. We should see things as they are and act in an appropriate way. Krishna and Prabhupada have so kindly come to give us this information. So now we know. We know how things are, and we can get out of this material world if we follow their directions very carefully. Even though there's baited traps everywhere, we can get our way through if we carefully follow. They've come and given us this guide to get out of the material world. And if people don't take this, then they have to suffer. So, you think of what people go through when somebody dies, how much grief and mourning there is, and how much a person who's so attached goes through when he dies. I just think right now how many people at this minute on this planet are in the process of leaving their bodies. You can't conceive of the pain of this world. And it's all unnecessary. But still, it's going on all around us. And somebody has kindly come and given us something to take us out of this situation. And we're extraordinarily fortunate. And we should take advantage of this this good fortune. Okay, any questions? Comments? Yeah?
Could you explain a little bit about mental sense gratification?
Yeah, mental sense gratification is usually the anticipation or memory of gross sense gratification. I mean, really, almost all sense gratification is mental anyway. When a boy has sex with a girl, at least in America, half, three-quarters of the mental sense gratification is saying, "Now I'm having sex. This is it. Now I've made it. I've got a great girl. She's really beautiful. Other men want her too, and now I'm the joyer. I'm such a big deal, you know. Hot shot, I've got a stripe on my sleeve, you know." It's all, see, it's mental. And whether you take out the mental component, there's not a lot there, actually. About 3 seconds of pleasure. So it's almost all mental. Anything else? It's just to be able to think, I am the enjoyer. Anything else? Yeah? No, because you understand what yukta vairagya means. It doesn't mean I dovetail sense gratification. It means I take my senses and I take sense objects and I take my natural activities and I engage them for Krishna service. That's Yukta Vairagya. It's not that I gratify my senses and then say, and this is devotional service because I'm gratifying my senses for Krishna. The more I enjoy, the more Krishna enjoys. I get to make lots of money and I'll give a little remnant to Krishna. People misunderstand Yukta Vairagya. Of course, it's true that to serve Krishna with those senses and the sense objects, then the sense objects are present to us. But it's even harder to go off away from everything, sit like this, close your eyes, and not go start raving mad. Because the sense objects are there in the mind in the subtle form, and the desires are still there. But Yukta Vairagya means that desires are purified. Any other way, you just try to keep them down, put a lid on them, screw down tight, you know, then it blows up anyway. But our desires have to become purified. So therefore, we things that are can be used in Krishna service, we don't reject, we use them in Krishna service. But you have to do that understanding that as soon as I take something that is for Krishna and try to become the enjoyer of that thing, then I'm in hot water. I'll become bewildered.